Welcome to the Jack Duffley Show, a weekly podcast exploring investing, real estate, the markets, law, technology, and everything in between. Here's your host, Jack Duffley.
Hey everyone, welcome to the very first episode of the Jack Duffley Show. I am your host, Jack Duffley, and I'm trying to bring a new one of these episodes every single week to talk about a variety of topics in the business world, especially those related to investing and the ever-changing environment that we always find ourselves in. So our very first guest for this week's show is Matt Maximek. He and I actually met a couple years back at the University of Illinois in the real estate club on campus, and we've periodically stayed in touch through networking events in the Chicago area, mainly through the Harold Eisenberg Foundation, a very great organization that focuses on real estate networking, but also has a dual purpose of focusing on gastrointestinal cancer research. But anyways, Matt, enough about how we met. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're doing today?
Sure. Thank you so much for having me. I've been watching your videos and you've been doing a fantastic job. Very impressed. And I wish I could do the same, but I do not have the same capability as you do.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, when Matt reached out to me, he just let me know that he really liked the content. That made me feel really good. So I thought I'd pay it forward and let him be the very first guest on the podcast. He was very excited to do that.
Yeah. So, I can talk about right when I got out of school, I started in commercial real estate. I started in a industrial brokerage role, so I focused on landlord and tenant representation on leasing. And about a year into that, I realized representing industrial landlords and tenants as a 22-year-old can be pretty tough. A lot of, you know, bootstrap guys, older guys that you got to deal with, and they're used to dealing with the same type of people as them, and I had an opportunity within my company to switch to an investment sales analyst role where I support the investment sales team. And when I say investment sales and commercial real estate, that's focusing on primarily selling investment properties or occupied properties. And about a year after doing that at the company, Podolsky Circle, we merged into the local Colliers International branch, and that happened in September. And my team became the office capital markets team there. And what that means is we have a variety of different services, primarily investment sales, as I referred to earlier, focusing on just office properties this time around, and also debt placement. So for owners who are selling properties or prospective buyers looking to purchase properties, we go out and source debt from them, primarily bank debt. And our team just focuses on office properties, as I said.
And is that all in the Chicago area?
Primarily. Now that we're at Colliers, we have a little bit of a wider grasp, more of the Midwest markets we're trying to tap into that need more of the institutional quality of product that we put out. But when we go to owners, we put together a pitch book, a pretty extensive pitch book of the property. I'm responsible for all the underwriting, all the financial analysis behind it. If anyone's ever heard of Argus, I spend a lot of time in Argus. And we present that to the owners, and we try to help them find a solution. It's not always, hey, let's sell your building for you. And we try and put together a package for them, and they decide if it's time for them to sell, maybe if they want to refinance. And then we go forward with that.
Yeah, I definitely want to get a little bit more of your insight on the current market. But before that, you mentioned that you started on the brokerage side. What was that transition like into more of the analyst role where you're crunching the numbers and really seeing what works for a deal? What was that transition like?
So I've always been more of an analytical person, and my colleagues at Podolsky understood that, but they knew I had a sales component to me. So they realized that the investment sales analyst role, you're still on a brokerage team. I'm still a licensed broker. I still participate in some deals on the side a little bit within the company, but it allowed me to combine the analytical skills along with my sales skills into one role. And so the goal of me now is to grow into more of a junior broker role, maybe bring on another analyst. I train him in everything I've been doing for the last couple of years and see how that goes.
So you really haven't given up the brokerage side. You're just kind of pivoting a little bit within it still.
Correct. Okay. The investment sales role, I talk to a lot of students and I really recommend this role for people looking to get into commercial real estate. It gives you the analytical skills on both the sales and buy side. We represent buyers sometimes. And it allows you to pivot into different roles within the industry, whether it be private equity on the ownership side, maybe the debt side. There's different ways you can go with it.
So what would your advice be to people who want to start out in commercial real estate, maybe just are starting out? Obviously, it's only been a couple of years for yourself, but it seems like you've done pretty well thus far. What would be your advice to a person trying to get started in commercial real estate?
Funnily enough, I get a lot of students directed towards me because I love talking about this and I love talking to students on guiding them in the right direction. Jack, you mentioned earlier the Eisenberg Foundation, and I need to plug that again. It's a big reason that I'm in the business and where I am today. The foundation, you mentioned half of it's towards cancer research and the other half is towards mentoring students, guiding them in the right direction, pairing them with mentors, scholarships, all sorts of networking events. And that is my number one route for them, is to take a look at that foundation. And my second is, it's very specific. I try to find out what their skills are, what they're looking for, and kind of push them towards the right direction that I think they should take. But an analytical role right out of school is definitely helpful. Going straight into a brokerage role, you develop some thick skin pretty quickly. I discovered that. There's the ownership side, which is a little bit more analytical too. So just reach out to younger professionals, older professionals. Everyone in real estate loves talking about themselves and their company. So you can get a lot of advice. You develop sort of a mentorship with a lot of people.
So even if, for those of you not in the Chicago area, if you are in the Chicago area, definitely check out the Eisenberg Foundation. But there are tons of different networking organizations throughout the country, especially in bigger cities. You're going to have a lot on the commercial side. So sounds like what you're saying, Matt, is start building your network and learn a thing or two from both younger and older people in positions that maybe you're interested in or are related to positions you're interested in, and get some insight from there as you start out. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you're never really going to know, even maybe from internships, you're never really going to know where you're going to go. I know that I want to be in real estate one way or another for the rest of my life, whether it be investing or still employed in the commercial real estate world. But I don't know where that path is going to take me. There's so many different aspects to this industry, but especially in the industry and even more so in Chicago, it's a very small world. It gets a little creepy sometimes, but you run into the same people. They are all in the same networks too. They talk, and it's really nice. It's a close-knit community, and I'm happy to be a part of it.
I mean, I've noticed that too, not only on the real estate side, but I'm currently in law school right now, and you see a lot of familiar faces in real estate law, for example, which is what I'm focusing on. And it is amazing how small networks can be, even in a large city like Chicago. And that's not unique. People trust who they trust. So they'll definitely stick with that. Now, another aspect of real estate, you know, it's interesting that you say you want to stay in it forever, given the current situation and the difficulties being thrown into not only the greater economy, but also real estate. I was wondering if you can kind of give your take on the coronavirus COVID situation, how it's affecting commercial real estate. And you said you had a particular focus on office. I'm sure that's been pretty interesting right now. I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on that.
Sure. So in my emails over the last couple of weeks, we've been getting a lot of polls to take surveys. We've conducted a couple. We've sent them out to investors, lenders, just to kind of get some input. And, you know, I don't claim to be all-knowing or knowing what's going to happen. Some people like to do that. And your videos have been great in terms of dealing with absorbing the content and producing what you think is a good take on the markets. But
yeah, and with that, I don't admit to be all-knowing either. I give my honest take, and I always put a disclaimer in there. None of this is financial advice. What Matt says is not financial advice. Go get your own financial advisor. Make your own conclusions. But here's what Matt has to say.
Sure. So since we're selling office buildings, we had a couple buildings that closed in the last couple months that weren't affected by the COVID situation. We have been trying to, just as holiday season comes around, we try to build our pipeline. So we are talking to owners, trying to figure out what we can do for them. So we've been proposing on a couple of buildings, and a lot of the sellers have said, you know, we're going to take a couple weeks, step back and see what's going to happen. That was a couple weeks ago. And now they're saying, you know, let's wait till the end of summer before we decide what to do. We do have a building on the market right now that we're trying to possibly refinance. We're selling it, but given the market climate, we're looking at refinancing because to get some favorable terms. Some lenders are very busy with PPP loans, and they don't have the capability to take on these bigger loans. This is a couple million dollar loan, so it's not at the top of these lenders' minds right now. But right now we're just acting like it's holiday season. we know it's a couple of the surveys I've seen say that, you know, some people don't think this will really hit real estate until another 6 to 12 months. You know, real estate, the markets tend to lag behind the rest of the markets. Office in particular, a lot of people seem to think that this is affecting office quite a lot. Maybe some co-working spaces it's affecting. We are involved with a lot of single story office space, and typically in single story office, you don't have a lot of common areas. You have the same individual units access 24/7. And so if you think about it, a lot of those are almost a little bit COVID proof because you're working in the same areas, you're not interacting in common bathrooms and whatnot. But retail is a whole nother area to talk about. I have a couple friends that work in retail, and they're all trying to deal with people not paying rent, much more than even the multifamily rent. But I'm just glad I'm not working in retail right now.
So it sounds like investors, both buyers and sellers, are kind of on pause right now, and they're trying to wait to see what happens. Is that an accurate take?
Yes, I would say so. Even on the buyer side, like I said, we're trying to build our pipeline. I've talked to a couple buyers. They're still underwriting deals. They're still taking a look at deals. They're not necessarily putting offers on, but they're building almost a backlog of properties they know they want to offer on. But no one knows where cap rates are right now. Even when we're proposing on buildings, we have, you know, we usually give a take range, but we have kind of a COVID buffer in those cap rates. So I think buyers and sellers are kind of at pause for the most part right now.
Now, you mentioned a little bit about how you're trying to refinance that one property. What's the debt situation been like? What's the credit environment looking like? Obviously, you mentioned that lenders are certainly busy with all the small business loans, among other things. How is it on the commercial side?
Sure. It's not being impacted as much as I know the small multifamily. I know they've been taking a bigger look at credit scores and raising that and whatnot. But with this building in particular and some other buildings, they're taking a look at the next couple of years. They've been asking questions. Lenders have been asking questions that they normally don't ask, mostly about tenant rollover. Is everyone paying rent on time? And I think they've been requiring a little bit more recourse, which means obviously that you need to back the loan a little bit and they can come after some of your assets. So the recourse, I think, is the most important part of what's being affected right now.
So it hasn't completely closed off, but definitely tightening. And they're making their standards a bit tougher for,
yes,
for borrowers. Okay. And you mentioned that with that refinance, what's the purpose of that refinance? Is it to buy time, or is it, why refinance their property now if you're trying to sell it?
Mm-hmm. It's cash flowing really well. He doesn't have too much debt. He's had the building for 5-6 years, so he's been paying off some of the debt. So if he can refinance, get a better loan on a great cash flowing property, rather than selling it, trying to sell it in a market that's, people are trying to buffer this COVID aspect into, then it's just not worth it. Might as well just refinance and maybe try it again in a year or so.
Hey listeners, for my real estate investors out there, check out my free real estate metrics spreadsheet in the show notes so you can quickly analyze potential deals. Cap rate, cash on cash, NOI, loan to value, debt service coverage ratio, cash flow, it calculates them all instantly. The spreadsheet even comes with a full mortgage calculator and amortization schedule. Get all of your deal metrics in one easy place by clicking the link to download my free spreadsheet. Don't go in blind into a real estate deal. Always know your metrics beforehand. Use this calculator to do just that. Back to the show. So obviously you can't see the future, but what's kind of the next steps for a lot of your clients and other investors? Mm-hmm. Once this all opens back up, is it just going to be business as normal? Is everything going to stay tight? What do you think is going to happen?
It's weird because a lot of investors act like it's just going to absolutely go back to normal. At a certain point, it's almost a matter of when it's going to happen. My personal opinion is I think it can go either way. I don't know if real estate's going to take a hit in pricing. One of the polls that I referenced earlier, it was a range of what percentage that you think commercial real estate pricing is going to take a hit. And I think the biggest percentage selected was 5 to 10%. A couple people selected over 30%. And I don't think it's going to be that bad, but I think over the next couple of months, we're really going to understand how big of an impact on commercial real estate this has.
I also want to get your opinion on office specifically. Mm-hmm. With all these people working remotely, a suspicion at least that I have is that a greater number of firms over the medium to long term are going to decide, hey, that was a great testing period for working remotely. Right. We don't need as big of an office. Do you see that as a threat to office demand?
I'll try and keep this answer unbiased as much as possible since I sell office buildings, but I really don't think so. Company Sterling Bay, they're a very big owner of office in the Chicagoland area. Their director of acquisitions actually posted on LinkedIn, I think 2 weeks back, and said, you know, this is making me really happy with our investments, because as I typed this LinkedIn post, it took me about half an hour because my 4-year-old was draped over my shoulder. And I know that co-working space, I think that's the biggest thing that's going to need a little bit of a revolution to figure out how to deal with that. But, you know, I'm definitely not as productive as working home 5 days a week. I think this did open my eyes to the possibility of working from home when need be, maybe one day a week even, as an extreme, but there's definitely still going to be that need. It'll definitely transition in some way, just as office always has. And retail too will need to transition in some way. I think retail a lot more needs to transition, but office, I think, will, as always, just always be that necessity.
I think that's a fair take. I didn't think of it that way, just removing workers from distractions that they may not have too much control over. Yeah. I think that's a great honest take, even if you may be biased. And I was thinking more along the lines of retail with office. it seems like there's more of a push towards amenities, just as there has been with apartments in years prior. And now with things like shopping centers, you have a lot more of an amenity focus. Yep. Is that the same thing for office?
Downtown office was the first to really take on this amenity-driven battle. It started out where there was a checklist that office buildings needed when tenants would tour those buildings. And even if they knew they weren't going to use them, they needed to check off that box, whether it be foosball table, beer taps, or workout facilities. The downtown office buildings, it was a race for the amenities. It was, and now tenants, you know, downtown are really starting to use that. And so you see a shift in the suburban office. Glenstar is a big office, suburban office owner, and they've taken on this battle too. And they've been offering a lot of amenities in their office buildings, their Class A office buildings. So you definitely see them. They're definitely being used now, and they're really garnering the rents that owners are putting out there.
And then what's your advice, at least your firm's advice, to you said you don't really like to tell a client that, hey, you should sell because you can get this. It's more working with them to determine the best solution. But right. Do you have any general advice to your clients as of late?
it would be my personal opinion, not my company's opinion.
Sure, fair.
It would be to just prepare for the market to go either way, whether it continue to improve from the last couple of years, at least take a proposal just to see what your building's worth right now. It doesn't mean you have to sell at the recommended price that someone suggests or refinance, but it's always good to know where your standing is, I think. You know, if we're here and it goes one way or the other, we can always adjust that and we can talk about it one way or the other, but that's the best answer I can do.
No, I'm with you there. Definitely be prepared either way. You never know if the market's going to go up, down, sideways, or in circles, as Matthew McConaughey would say in The Wolf of Wall Street. Anyways, I just got a couple more questions for you, Matt. The big one that I'll be asking every guest on the show is, do you have any book recommendations?
Sure. And I did prepare.
Excellent.
So I do have one non-real estate book and I have it here with me. It's How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. I like this book. The title sounds a little cheesy. I don't know if you read it, but
yep, I have.
It's really about, you know, treating people with respect and treating them right. And, you know, good things will come to you for that. And, the real estate book that I have here, it's a little basic, but it ties into the bigger overall community of Bigger Pockets. I'm a big fan of the forums. I'm a big fan of the books in general. You know, real estate books either tend to be very mindset oriented or action driven. I think this is a good combination of both. And I think it's good to be involved with the forums and seeing what real people are saying on a day-to-day basis. I'm a big fan of Reddit for that too, on all the personal finance, the real estate investing, commercial real estate subreddits. I like hearing what actual people have to say. That's it.
Sounds great. Definitely second that on forums. And mm-hmm. There's just such a wealth of information out there, not only in books, but just throughout the internet. And podcasts, not just this one, but Bigger Pockets is a great podcast for more of that high level perspective. And you got mm-hmm. things like, you know, the Joe Fairless Best Ever Show for a little more technical but shorter bite-sized episodes. Lots of great information out there, not just in podcasts and books, but if just doing a simple Google search, you'll be surprised what you can find. And then lastly, Matt, where can any listeners get in touch with you if they want to learn more or just get to know you a little bit better?
Sure. I'd say probably the best is just my LinkedIn, Matt Maksymyk, Maksymyk. You can message me on there. It's easy to do. I'm very quick to respond typically.
And with that, Matt, thank you very much for coming on to the very first episode of the Jack Duffley Show. I'll be doing a new episode every single week, and maybe you'll be back on the show soon enough, Matt. Thanks again.
Thank you. Very honored. Thank you, Jack.
Thanks for listening to the Jack Duffley Show. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss any new episodes. For more content on personal finance, real estate, and other topics, check out jackduffley.com.